This is West Southwest on WMUK. I'm Arlene McMichael. Coming up, Gordon Evans talks with Michigan Campaign Finance Network Director Craig Mauger for a breakdown of the latest campaign finance reports. But first, I speak to Shannon Lanier. His is not a household name, but that of his great-grandfather is. Lanier is believed to be a great-grandson of President Thomas Jefferson and enslaved woman Sally Hemings. He's co-authored a book about the link called Jefferson's Children, The Story of One American Family. He's the keynote speaker at the Kalamazoo Legacy Luncheon on February 27th, where scholarship recipients and community members will be honored. We spoke by phone from New York City, where the Emmy Award-winning TV journalist now lives. What is your exact relationship to President Thomas Jefferson?
Well, Thomas Jefferson is my great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather.
Okay, and I didn't add up how many of those greats. How many of those greats are those? Is that six?
Right, six greats. Yep, six greats.
And I'm sure that people would wonder, okay, has this been authenticated?
Yeah, it's basically what the historians and the lawyers and the doctors and everybody has done to basically prove that Jefferson is the father is they took all the oral history, which is sometimes better than the written stuff, all the oral history, all the known facts been written down because Jefferson took very detailed notes, as well as the DNA tests that were done to prove Jefferson was the father of the children. And I'm a descendant through the Madison-Hemings line, which is the second to last born, to Thomas Jefferson and Sally Hemings. So it was a lot of things they did. I mean, as you can imagine, this is one of the most researched and vetted families in the world. So, you know, they wanted to make sure, you know, that all the, you know, rocks were turned over and they looked at everything. And, you know, one of the main facts, well, I guess two of the main things besides the DNA that points to Jefferson is the fact that he was the only male Jefferson at the plantation every time Sally conceived the child. And the other is the fact that he freed all of his and Sally Hemings' children at the age of 21, the only people he did that for.
You co-authored a book, I believe it was released in 2002, called Jefferson's Children, The Story of One American Family.
So my co-author Jane Feldman and I were able to travel around the country interviewing descendants of Thomas Jefferson and Sally Hemings, four generations of descendants from Thomas Jefferson and Sally Hemings, as well as Thomas Jefferson and his wife Martha. So we wanted to get all sides of the stories and perspectives of how people descend from this American president. And we were able to talk to over two dozen people and get intimate and in-depth interviews with these people in our book for people to read for the first time the voices of the actual descendants. Because, you know, before that, you would hear it from historians, authors, different people, but never from the family themselves. And we were able to bring that to people for the first time.
Was it easy to get their cooperation?
Yeah, surprisingly, a lot of people were ready to tell their story. For so many years, their stories have been told by other people or from other people's perspectives. So I think that a lot of people were happy and felt a little vindicated that they were actually able to tell their own story and how they relate. I mean, you hear everything from people who grew up black but looked white and how they never were white enough for the white community, never black enough for the black community. Other people who talked about finding out that they are related to Sally Hemings' side of the family after growing up their entire life thinking that they were white, and then all of a sudden, like, well, you're not who you thought you were, and you know how that relates to their life and upbringing and culture shock for them. And then other people who were raised as racist because their family was hiding the truth of who they really were, and then had to do a whole 180 to try to turn their life around, and was able to. So it was a lot of amazing stories.
So what you're saying is some of the people you spoke to, in fact, had no idea that black blood ran in their veins. And is that because you had some earlier ancestors who passed? That's common in American history. But is that what happened in this case?
Yes, a lot of people, some people did not know because their family started passing for white and they hid the story of who they were, their family, and they took it to the grave with them.
And in other cases, are you suggesting that there were some people who in fact knew they had black blood and was passing? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, it's still happening today. Yeah, there are some people that are still passing today and are comfortable and know, and some people that don't know I mean, there are a lot of people in this country who descend from various ancestors that they have no idea that they have black blood running through their veins because it's been hidden. Because remember, if someone found out you were passing or trying to trick or lie to them, they could put threats on your life, on your family's life. So a lot was done to preserve people's passing and our families in our country because they had to protect themselves.
I was reading a little snippet of a New York Times book review, and it said that this particular clan, meaning yours, is representative of us all, a symbol of the wild, varied, mixed-up connection and disconnection, assimilation and alienation that constitute the family of American citizens. This is a story of America.
Exactly. And that's why we call the book Jefferson's Children, the Story of One American Family, because it is a story of an American family. And our family just happens to relate back to a president, but this is the result of slavery in our country. So many people have been mixed up and, you know, so many races have been combined because of things that were done to slaves and children that were born from them. So we're just like every other family. It just happens to be related to a president.
You're listening to a West Southwest interview with Shannon Lanier, believed to be a great-grandson of President Thomas Jefferson and enslaved woman Sally Hemings. He talks in Kalamazoo on February 27th. I know your background is in journalism, of course, but why did you feel that you must write this book?
Well, it was actually my co-author, Jane Feldman, who's a photojournalist in New York City, who decided that I should be the person who take part in this book with her. She's not related to the family. She's been sort of adopted to the family now. But she was the one who said, you know, you're a young voice. At that time, I was like 18. She said, you know, you're very involved in the family. I helped her accomplish a picture that she wanted to take of the descendants of Thomas Jefferson and Sally Hemings all standing on the steps of Monticello together for the first time after slavery. And so once that picture was taken, it was seen around the world. And she said, you know, I think we're dealing with more than just one photograph here. And that's when we set up on a journey to find out more about these people that were in the photograph and tell their stories for the first time.
So when you found out, you were 18?
No, I've always known my whole life that I've been a descendant of Thomas Jefferson. That's when we set out to do the book after a reunion at Monticello it was actually like the descendants of Thomas Jefferson and Sally Hemings were there thanks to the invitation of one of my cousins on the Martha Jefferson side, Lucian K. Truscott, who said, you know, I want all of my family to gather at Monticello. So he got us all there thanks to Oprah. He made the announcement on the Oprah Winfrey Show, and when we heard that, we said, okay, let's go.
And what year was that? Refresh my recollection.
1999.
Let's move this forward. I'd like to ask you, how would you assess race relations today? And what do we need to do to bring about racial reconciliation?
This country has come a long way, but we still have so far to go with all the police brutality and hate, and even coming from the leaders of this country, spewing hate and separation of different types of people. I think we, one, have to start our example from the top down. So we need a person who's going to be in the Oval Office who's going to be able to unite this country and bring us together, not tear us apart. And then we need other people to follow suit, follow the leadership of being able to do good to each other and, you know, help each other and not just to be divisive all the time, you know. But until we get that to happen, I think it's up to us every day to, you know, live out what Jefferson said, but not what it meant at the time. He said, all men are created equal. Of course, when he wrote those words, he didn't know. It wasn't meant for slaves or women or people who did not own land at the time. Even some white men weren't included in that. But, you know, I think it's now been translated into a powerful statement that all men and women and people should be considered equal and treated as equals. And that's what we need to, you know, I mean, some of the basic stuff that we learned as a kid, do unto others as you would want someone to do unto you. I mean, some of the basic things, treat each individual on the content of the character, not their race, not their creed, not their religion. Just treat people as people as you would want to be treated. And I think that could heal so many issues in our country, in our families, in our community. It starts at home, and then it needs to spread out. But to just act like you can't do anything and nothing can be done, that's unacceptable.
On a policy level, what tangibly could be done? I know that social commentator, journalist Ta-Nehisi Coates has written an extensive article about the case for reparations in his role as a writer for The Atlantic magazine. That article is in his new book, We Were 8 Years in Power. Do you see that as something that should be done? Or do you have other thoughts in terms of what we can do to promote racial healing in this country?
I think if reparations is giving out, it should not be given to individuals, but institutions or to communities to, you know, bring the under-income or Black communities up to speed with the rest of the world so that the schools have the books that they need, the computers they need, the technology that will make them be competitive with other schools out there, that there are put programs in communities to help people and to build up the communities, to, you know, restore the communities and really help in ways that's going to help an entire people instead of just individuals.
Do you think that that's the main way that we should go about trying to kind of level the playing field and the harm done through slavery? Or is there something else that you suggest?
I mean, definitely more policies need to be put in place that are protecting us and protecting our people and getting rid of this, you know, the school to prison jail pipeline that's happening. I mean, there's so many policies that could be put in place, but, you know, you need the right people in office. And a lot of people think that, you know, oh, just yelling on the outside is going to help. We need people on the inside as well to help these policies take root and to really affect change in our community.
Another topic that I'd like to address, it may be somewhat indelicate, but given kind of the Me Too movement going on, I think there's heightened sensitivity in terms of a woman being able to have ownership of her body. Clearly, Sally Hemings was a slave. And so what have you come to believe to be the nature of the relationship between Sally Hemings and President Jefferson? And then I have another question to ask you after you answer.
I think if you ask the people in my family, you will get varying opinions from everyone. Of course, I would love to imagine it as a loving relationship, because who really wants to imagine their great-great-great-great-great-grandmother being raped for 38 years? So to, you know, ease the pain in the heart, you know, sometimes people would like it to be a love relationship, which some historians have said makes their relationship different from other slave-slave-master relationships. But I mean, at the same time, she was a slave. So regardless of what she wanted, he had control over the situation. And the fact that, you know, that she was property and he could do what he wanted with her at any moment at any time was also the reality of the situation. So maybe it was a relationship of convenience. Maybe it's like, well, you know, it's going to happen anyway. So maybe Sally said, let me get out of it what I can get out of it. Let me go along with it. Just because, you know, it's going to happen. So, you know, I doubt he asked permission, but, you know, I don't know. I was not there, but, you know, we can imagine what we want it to be. But and I know a lot of people are very stern. No, it was definitely rape. But again, they weren't there either. So we don't know what the situation was or the relationship was. But it is documented that, you know, after his wife, Martha, died in childbirth, that, you know, he began his 38-year-long relationship with Sally Hemings. And it really wasn't documented with him publicly being with any other woman, you know, after him starting that relationship with Sally Hemings.
I know there's been a lot of dialogue, certainly online, in terms of, and it even applies to modern day, that even if it wasn't rape, can there actually be love or a consensual relationship when one has power over another person and they don't have the ability to leave?
Exactly. And that's why, you know, it's hard to imagine it as a love. If there was anything in a love relationship, maybe it was more of a Stockholm syndrome where you start to relate to your captor and, you know, start to feel sympathy or empathy for them. But, you know, I don't think so, in my opinion, because even if I was in love with somebody, even if I liked somebody, I always would feel like you have no choice. You have no option. You are stuck there for life, and, you know, what you do. That's why I say sometimes it's just make the best out of the inevitable, which is unfortunate for that situation, but that was the situation most slaves were in at that time.
Absolutely.
I think, you know, he should be held accountable for his actions as well. People like to give him a pass because he was a president, but he was a slave-owning president, and arguably a rapist.
I'm sorry, arguably a racist or a rapist?
Rapist. Maybe that term didn't exist at the time, but it surely exists now.
And I guess what I was curious about, have you always known and were you always told when you were growing up that you were a descendant of President Jefferson? Was this something that was always discussed?
Yeah, ever since I can remember, my parents and my mother especially would tell me, yeah, we're descendants of Thomas Jefferson. But it was no big deal growing up. It was just like, oh, one of those things, you know?
Uh-huh.
And I remember even going to school and telling the kids in my class that I was a descendant of Thomas Jefferson. The teacher said I was lying, to sit down and stop telling lies. And then my mother had to come and correct the teacher, like, no, he's not lying. This is who he is. You know, she taught my brother and I to be strong in the belief of who we are, to know where we come from, and don't let anyone tell us differently, because, you know, if you do, people will start to define you for the rest of your life.
You've been listening to TV journalist Shannon Lanier on West Southwest. He'll talk about his family's link to President Thomas Jefferson, among other topics, when he headlines the Kalamazoo Legacy Luncheon on February 27th at the Radisson Plaza Hotel in downtown Kalamazoo. The deadline to register is February 22nd. For more info and a longer version of this interview, visit WMUK.org. For West Southwest on WMUK, I'm Earlene McMichael.